This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
Well, I would like to welcome to the Sub 70 podcast PGA Tour player, U.S. amateur champion, Ben Hogan Award winner, Ricky Barnes. Ricky, I really, really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks for having me.
First off, did you watch the Masters? And if you're not playing in the event, are you still a fan of it? Or how much of it did you kind of take in last week?
Yeah, I think it's for sure the one tournament that you might play in your weekend around. Like if I'm going to go practice or play, try to play early because I'm on the West Coast to make sure I can pass you the back nine. So, yeah, I mean, if kids have sports, my kids and stuff like that, obviously that'll overrule everything. But we had an early kind of baseball game on Saturday, so I was able to watch some of that, some of the Saturday afternoon. And then Sunday actually worked out well. Just kind of went to the gym in the morning and kind of planning myself to watch, the last 11 or 12 holes. And yeah, I think some people were nervous of, it not becoming a tournament, or Reed might run away with it. But man, was that exciting, the last, hour and 45 minutes of that tournament.
And you've played in it. And what is it about that, besides the obvious, but what is it, the nuances of that back nine that makes it literally like the greatest theater ever, that inevitably someone makes a run and someone can make a bogey? Like architecturally or from playing that tournament, what is it about that nine holes of golf that makes it that special from a dramatic standpoint?
I think it's the risk reward of the back nine along with the pin placements. You start off the back nine hoping to get two pars, really, par 10, par 11, and technically par 12. I mean, if 12 wasn't 12 and most other courses, if you had a 9-iron in your hand most of the week, on that par 3, maybe an 8-iron, it's probably a birdie hole or, birdie-ish hole, but it's number 12, so you technically hope to par the first three holes, pretty tough on the back nine, and then you can make some hay. You got two reachable par 5s, 14 with the pin placement the last day as well, like they said, is doable, and so is 16. I mean, you get it on the right level on 16, and, you saw a lot of shots inside that 15, 18 foot range that are pretty flat putts once you're down on that level. So that's what makes it so exciting. Like I said, risk reward, pin placements, course firms up a little bit, so you're having shorter irons than you normally would on, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of the Masters.
How hard is it to pull the club on 12 when you're there with your caddy, assuming there is some wind? Is it literally you just make the best guess you can because of the amount of swirling, or is it that tough to pull the right club in the right trajectory on that hole?
Yeah, because it seems like, everyone starts on number one, even on Thursday and Friday. So by the time you get over there, it's kind of a little bit in the afternoon or late morning, so there's some type of breeze. And your caddy's standing, 5 yards from you, and he feels it right to left, and you feel it down, or vice versa. You're feeling left to right, and he's feeling in out of the right. So, yeah, you got to be kind of patient, hit the ball right when you feel like you feel what the wind's doing. And even that sometimes, I remember my first year as an amateur, I'm, telling the ball, sit, and I hit just over the bunker and came back in it. So it is a bit of a guessing game even when you feel like you hit the perfect shot.
Are you friendly with Patrick Reed, and, how well do you know him? And from that standpoint, if you do, you got to be really happy for him and excited.
I'm not really, I don't know him real well. Obviously I'm a bit older than him. You hear some things. I have played a nine hole at least once, if not twice, practice round with him. I think Hilton Head 2 years ago. But some stuff that I've read, he does play a lot of practice rounds by himself. But I mean, that being said, the guy's a hell of a talent, played great golf. And I tell you what, he's got a huge set of balls on him. Because go out there, do all that stuff, interviews that are kind of talking about him. But, man, the guy can play. And if there's probably one guy that you want on your team right now in the Ryder Cup, he might be the first pick. You know, might not be first pick of playing a practice round with, but he might be your first pick as your partner in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, and I talked to some other, we had a couple of tour players on the podcast this week, and sort of the same thing you said. Like, I wonder sometimes this media thing of whatever he did when we all probably made bad decisions in college at some point. And he's got to be a different person, more mature, and it seems like the guys I talked to really like him. And, you know, he can kind of be portrayed the wrong way by the media sometimes as well. At least that's the feedback I've gotten. Everyone seems to like the kid.
Yeah, I don't think the interaction with a lot of people since he's been on the tour have been bad. You know, like I said, I think it was a lot of the maybe late junior golf, college for sure, just because of, you know, I know he's not close with anyone that he really played college golf with. But no, I mean, ever since he's been out there, I don't think he's, you know, been a story where, you know, he had gotten into it with someone on the golf course, you know, which is kind of where we interact. You know, we interact with these guys in and around the golf course. So I'm not going to, you know, sit here and say he's a bad guy. He's done stuff to me. Hey, you know, we all kind of beat to our own drum, and you know, he obviously does that in his own way. But hey, married. I know he's got a little kid. You know, I'm happy for that he can enjoy it with him and his family as well.
Yeah, that part of it's cool. Like I said, people mellow as they get older, and
yeah, you
know, the guys I've talked to had good responses. So, 2003, you were the low amateur at the Masters, and with the history of amateurs, you know, being able to play the Masters. Looking back at that experience, what's sort of your fondest memories of having a good tournament and being in Butler Cabin, you know, as the low amateur during that year?
Yeah, every week, you know, the Masters comes on, and if I'm not there, you know, I've been fortunate to play a couple times as a pro, but I mean, there's nothing like playing in the playing in the Masters as an amateur. I mean, you're staying right there up at the crow's nest, you know, every night, you know, you're done, there's still 3 hours left to play, and, you know, you're up in the room, you know, whatever that is, 200 yards behind the, or 100 yards behind the 18th green, and just kind of watching guys come up. So nothing but good things, bonding with the other amateurs that were playing that week up in the crow's nest. And the best thing for me is I'll never forget, I was so excited to play and teed up Thursday. We actually got rained out. I played 28 holes Friday, and then I played 26 holes on Saturday and got done, you know, played a Tiger the first two rounds and followed it up by Saturday, second to last group with Phil Mickelson as an amateur. My first ever Masters. So obviously I would have loved to made a little bit more of a splash, but I mean, it was an unbelievable week. I was able to finish low AM. I know myself and Hunter, you know, both made the cut. I was fortunate to get the Silver Cup and was so excited, you know, as a pro to get back there and have success as well. You know, actually my amateur finish was my highest finish. And I mean, that's what we, you know, we strive for is to get into these majors and compete. I've been fortunate to almost do it three times in the Masters.
And that's my follow-up to that is you've gotten to play in all four majors. Is there one major championship that you enjoy the most or one style of golf course? Obviously, it doesn't change at Augusta, but a U.S. Open-style course, which you've done well. Is there one sort of major that really kind of fits the strengths of your game? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I mean, for sure, as an amateur, I kind of hit a high draw, and I hit it far. And so Augusta set up perfect for me in my eye. I mean, there's obviously some holes you can't and do some stuff, but if you're kind of doing it and you're long, you could clear some of those hills. It was great. But I think the mental side, and as I grew older and have had success with, you know, late amateur golf and into my pro careers, I mean, the way that they're setting up U.S. Open now, U.S. Opens, I think, are great, you know, and I've always enjoyed USGA events. I've had success in USGA events. But as a straight shot maker's course, which I feel like I've been a little bit, you know, I'm a field player. I have really always enjoyed going and playing in, you know, the British Opens as well. You know, so I would say US Open and British Opens for me are kind of right there. One, meaning the courses that the US Open's going to play and how they set them up. And two, the British Opens of, you know, wind and hitting a lot of shots and bump and runs and, you know, maybe clubbing up two clubs and, you know, three-fingering it in there. But as an atmosphere-wise, yeah, there's nothing like Augusta.
Let's talk about the current season. You've played in 11 events so far. What's sort of your analysis of where your game is for 2018, and what are you sort of working on at this point?
Well, I've been working with my coach, Steve Graham, for a little over 3 years now, and we reiterate a lot of the stuff, and I got to take a lot of the fields that I practice on the golf course, and it's always easier said than done when you're kind of doing something like that. But I mean, when I'm playing good, I'm playing really good, and some of it's mental, when you get out there and just kind of trust. That's my biggest thing when I get out there. The muscle memory, I feel's there. But when you get out on the golf course, kind of, trusting what you've been working on for that long. So late in the season last year, I started to trend a little bit better. Played well, I played okay in the fall and was actually feeling really good on the West Coast. Didn't score great. And then I haven't just gotten into a lot of tournaments. I played decent in the Dominican. I didn't score great. And I wanted to get back out and play, but I've kind of been on the sidelines here. And so I'm looking forward to playing the next three events. I'll leave Monday to go play the Valero Texas Open in San Antonio, followed by playing with Colt Nost in the Zurich Classic in the team event in New Orleans, and hoping to get into Wells Fargo Championship in Charlotte right after that as well. So I'm pretty excited. Been playing a lot of golf, going to the golf course right now. So I'm excited and antsy. I'm sure my wife's ready to kick me out because I've been home too much.
How much fun is that event going to be with Colt as your partner? He's got to be, I didn't know you were playing with him, but just it's got to be a blast playing with Colt Nost for a couple, hopefully, all 4 days. He's got to be hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, we have a good rep here in town. He's a member of a Wisbrock with us. He's been here for 2 years now since he moved over from Texas. And it's fun. I can kind of sit back, laugh, chime in, and let him do the needling and talk it out on the golf course. So we'll have some fun, and like anything else, it's a lot more fun when we get something going. And so hopefully we'll get a little, get something going and make a little run for him out there.
Did you guys pick out your theme music yet that you're walking out to?
No, I heard about it last year that they were kind of talking about doing it. It never came to fruition. And funny you say that, we were texting Tuesday and Wednesday this week. He's back in Hilton Head. And we got a few up our sleeve. I think we have to submit two or three, and then I think they have to kind of okay them. We have to rank them in one, two, or three. So we've thrown out, two pucks, two of America's Most Wanted, and a few others to give you a little taste of our style.
That's going to be interesting. I can't wait to see what some of these guys come up with of what they're going to walk out to. It's going to be a fun event to watch. Follow up to the events. How far out do you know when you're going to be able to play in these PGA Tour events? So it's got to be, I'm guessing, difficult to plan your schedule, or do they give you a pretty good heads up of like, yes, you're in Valero, yes, you're in New Orleans. How far out are you planning?
For me, I'm in that 126-150 category from last year. But we have a website that I can check when I'm in the field. I'm actually the last guy in the field of Valero right now, which sometimes it'll move the week of. So I plan on getting in there, and I think I should be okay. And then for sure in New Orleans, we're in by plenty there. So I'm not as worried with that one. And then the following week, I'm out by about three or four in Wells Fargo. So it's, like I said, I've always, the last pretty much 9-10 years been able to pick my schedule, and the tournaments this year is a little bit different because the ones I do get in, I for sure have to play in and don't get to plan it as well. So that being said, the people that do commit to the tournament, so if you're on the fence, you have to commit today by 5 p.m.
Okay, so there's a little bit, you got a little bit of time to sort of make that work.
So. Yeah, so Friday, the week before at 5 p.m. is the cutoff.
Will you play web events at all if you go for a stretch where you're not in a PGA Tour event, just to kind of keep your game sharp and be competitive this year?
So I would have. The only one that's really come out where I could have played so far until then would have been the tournament down in Mexico. And I was actually at home doing some stuff with my family, and I didn't feel like just going to Mexico just for the week. I know it wasn't an easy place to get into. The only other part would be around the invitationals coming up in about a month. But other than that, I'm going to get into actually quite a few events coming up. Hoping to get into the next three. Then I might get into only one of the next three, hopefully qualify for the U.S. Open. And then things start to spread out a little bit after the Open, where I would play probably 6 of 8 weeks. So if I need to, yeah, in a month, I think it's May, from like the Players to Memorial, I might play in one event. But that being said, I don't want to go out, play two events out there, come home for a week, and then go play five on the road after that,
right,
and burn myself out.
Right.
I have gotten off to an okay start, you know, in my category, where if I can go and get something going these next 2 or 3 weeks, you know, even myself, I can easily lock myself in, you know, for next year, or even getting into an invitational to off the current FedEx Cup list.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, next couple of weeks are critical.
Yeah. So I would say the max,
like you're trending the right
yeah,
way.
To answer your question, the max two, maybe one, just depending on where the web's at and where we're at.
Any equipment changes for 2018? You got anything new in the bag this year that you're really liking the performance of ball wise or club wise?
Actually pretty much all the same. I did switch late fall. First time I went to the new Wilson driver, the C300, and first event with it, I top 10. You know, I've been hitting it good. I was finding the center of the face a lot, and I was hoping it carried over the tournament. I've been driving it a little better. So I did switch to that this year. And like I said, the first tournament, I think I was just more nervous hitting a, you know, driver on the golf course, because I was hoping it was performing like it did when I was practicing and playing and on the track, man. And it did. So that was pretty much the only change, really. You know, we switch out wedges probably every 3 months or so, but I'm a guy that does not switch much at all, top to bottom. Still playing the V6 irons with Wilson, so, and they're there for another year. They didn't really bring out a new set, which is great because I don't like to change. So, just the driver for me, and that's been probably 4 months in the bag, 5 months. So not much of a change here in the last, you know, three or four months.
You know, I was doing my research on kind of my outline for this interview. It just, I was thinking to myself, my gosh, time flies. You know, I remember when you won the USAM and you turned professional. So my question is, like I said, it's all of a sudden a blink of an eye and you've been out there for quite a long time. What do you still enjoy the most about playing on the PGA Tour after all these years? What is still the most special thing about it that you still enjoy?
I think it's just straight competition. You know, it's tough to, just now with kids, you know, it's kind of the like going in, dreading a workout. But when you come out of it, you know, you feel great. You know, you release whatever you had in you, and, you know, you're kind of a new man. And that's kind of going into tournaments. You know, I've had 2 or 3 weeks layoff and, you know, a lot of practice. You know, some days you dread going to practice. But once you step on, you know, the tournament week's golf course and start competing and, you know, having a chance to teed up on Thursday and actually win a golf course, you know, come late Sunday afternoon, that's what I still strive for. You know, I still don't have a win on the PGA Tour. I have everything from a second, you know, to a 10th in the top 10. And that's the one thing that I'm still hungry to do. You know, I think if I was at this age and was in the 126 to 150 category and maybe have 2 or 3 wins under my belt, you know, I think it'd be easier to be a little more content of where I was at or where my career's gone, but still hungry enough to go and, you know, put in my time on and off the golf course while still being a husband and a dad, is what, you know, gets me motivated and going, and would love to get a victory here, not only this year, but sometime soon, and enjoy it with my family this summer.
When you started playing golf in Stockton, California, who introduced you to the game and how did you kind of fall in love with it?
My dad. Yeah, my mom was kind of a tennis player and a school teacher. And now the roles have reversed. My dad hardly ever plays golf, and I think my mom's doing 2 or 3 days a week after retiring after, 34 years of teaching, 33 years of teaching. So, but my dad was probably maybe the best over sports probably athlete I've come across, from ping pong, pool, shooting hoops, you know, was a 1 or 2 handicap career, all right and left-handed, switch hitter in baseball, played in the NFL. So he'd go out with his buddies, you know, that kind of either late Friday and Saturday game, or maybe Saturday and Sunday morning, drop a ball. You know, when my brother was old enough, my brother's 4 years ahead of me, and the same thing with myself. And we played every sport. So it was kind of funny how you hear some people talking about, if you're good enough, the sport will find you. I feel like that's exactly what happened, not only with myself, but my brother, is that, you know, we played baseball, football, basketball, golf, I mean, you name it. And somehow we both ended up with a scholarship to the University of Arizona, somehow, some way.
Yeah, and at what point and what age did you get really, really good where being a D1 college athlete was realistic? What age did you really sort of come into your own in golf?
I always tell the story. I was a freshman in high school. I had already played, what was it? We had already had the, you know, football season, the basketball season. Then we were in golf, so we're in the late, was it kind of, probably right around this time, I guess, really. Right around this month, give or take. And I was playing my league championship, you know, just the, whatever, eight schools or six schools in your league. And the first time I had ever shot, so I was 14, you played the tips, you know, the blue tees or whatever, and I shot 69. First round, I had ever shot in the 60s, and it was in competition. I won the league championship, you know, against sophomores, juniors, seniors. Two guys in my league were actually going to play for a scholarship in D1, and that's when it kind of hit me. And then I just played football and golf the rest of my – I always had to play something in the fall, but 14, freshman year, league championship, I went out and shot 69.
And then when you went to Arizona, was there other colleges you were, you know, getting offers from? And how did you go through the process of picking Arizona off in, or versus another college that you may have had an opportunity at?
Yeah, so we're allowed 5 visits, I think is what it was. I'm pretty sure it's still the same. And it's just, so I went on them all. I mean, man, I'm senior in high school, and they say you can go for, you know, whatever it is, a, you know, 48-hour trip to go check out colleges. So I went on, I think, what, 4 or 5 of my trip. I think I went on all 5. And probably at the end of the day, the 3 that really I narrowed it down to were UCLA, UNLV, and Arizona. My brother had gone to Arizona, so he was going to be leaving when I came in. I kind of knew what to expect down there, the players that were there. I loved the big kind of Pac-10 at the time, Pac-12 now, of having other sports. UNLV had an unbelievable team, practice facility, et cetera. Really good, like I said, you know, current team, and knew a few guys there. I don't know how I would have done in Vegas for 4 years. And then both of my parents.
Well, you would have.
Well, yeah, it would have been.
Yeah, it would have been fun. Yeah, that would have been an experience, to say the least.
Yeah, I don't know how my golf game would have been. But and then UCLA, both of our parents actually went to UCLA. You know, love the golf courses in down there. But it turned out to just be such a great college experience, and wouldn't have picked anywhere else but the University of Arizona. And like I said, I'm still close with other athletes from there. I actually just played 4 days ago up here at Whisper Rock. They stayed the night the day after the Warriors played the Suns, and I played with Andre Iguodala 4 years ago, or 4 days ago up here. He's huge into golf now, and it's a pretty close-knit community, you know, with all the athletes that come out of there.
And you had one hell of a college career in golf. I mean, the Pac-10 Freshman of the Year, rising all the way to first-team All-American. Compared to other, you know, high-quality D1 golfers from that era, what was the strengths of your game back then, or what did you do really, really well to sort of separate yourself?
I guess probably being an athlete was probably my hands. I had kind of great visualization, you know, kind of short game, chipping and putting, wedge game, and then length. You know, it wasn't, not to say that I was the best driver of the golf ball or, you know, wood player, but length helped. I was kind of, you know, tall, strong, athletic, and my hands. And it's turned into now where when I came out of college and career and kind of mid is probably my mid-iron game and iron game. I think there was 2 years in a row or 3 years where I was kind of top 10 and par 3 playing out on the tour.
And then, obviously, winning the U.S. Amateur, what an accomplishment. Oakland Hills, historic venue. Looking back at that, what's sort of your memories of that accomplishment in that week?
Nothing but smiles. I mean, what an event. Get to celebrate it with my brother on the bag. He had caddied for me in a few just amateur events throughout the season. And I'm still really close. You know, we used to go on all these trips. You know, people don't realize a lot of you know, kids that play golf and go play the amateur golf, you know, during the middle of the summer. I was fortunate. I got to go play. My parents allowed me to go play two or three events, and we stay with host families. So come again, I qualify for the USAM, and I'm staying with a host family. And to this day, unbelievable close to my host family out there, you know, their daughter and her husband and their kids. He's a wealth advisor that I still use back in Oakland Hills, like Birmingham, Michigan. And they were at our wedding. They come and see me at the Masters before, across the tournament. So great relationships, great week. And, man, what a tough golf course. They've added even more length to that golf course since we left. And I was fortunate they did their 100th anniversary at Oakland Hills. And now I am, as of about 8 months ago, a member at Oakland Hills where I won the U.S. Amateur.
How cool is that? And I was also looking at the field from the year you won it. I was shocked how many guys qualified for match play of how many of those guys wound up on tour. I mean, the thing you had to get through, like Bill Haas and then beat Hunter Mahan. I mean, that there was 30 guys who I recognized the names of who like made a splash on the PGA Tour. That competition you got through that year was staggering how good that field was.
Yeah, and I was telling the story the other day. It's funny you say that. A week ago, I was telling the story. You have to beat six guys in the event, roughly a 312 or 18 start the week. And I bet you it's never been done before. I played the stroke play with Hunter in threesomes, and we faced each other in the finals. I bet you that's never, ever happened before. And you have to win six matches to win the USAM. Four of the guys I beat are still on tour.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, even the guys who, I mean, it's like Charlie Belgian. I mean, I was literally dumbfounded because you just don't see, there's a lot of good amateur players, but I was literally shocked of how many names, you know, Anthony Kim was there. Like, that field has got to be the deepest USAM field I've ever seen of guys
whose
careers gone past it. It's crazy.
Yeah, DJ Trahan, Hunter Mahan, Bill Haas. I mean, I beat Spencer Levine. I beat Daniel Summerhayes. Brett Stegmeier's on tour. Beat, you know, Bill, Hunter in the finals. The other side of the bracket, same thing. It was pretty crazy, like you said. A lot of times, you know, you're playing a lot of mid-amateurs, guys that are, you know, businessmen that play golf and qualified. But to come out of that, like you said, that field, that golf course on top and, you know, parlayed into some awesome major finishes later that year too were pretty rewarding.
Yeah, there's no chance in hell that the 28-year-old banker with a +2 handicap was making it through that gauntlet. I mean, the quality of play was way too good. After college, you turned pro. And what was at first when you turned pro? I'm assuming as a USAM champion, you had quite a few sponsors exemptions. What was sort of your pathway to professional golf? Where you kind of found your full-time tour when you sort of made that step?
Well, I got on tour. I was fortunate. I came out with, you know, decent pedigree where I could get into some tournaments off of sponsors exemptions, whether it was PGA Tour, Web.com Tour, European Tour, et cetera. And so, yeah, it wasn't the easiest of roads. You know, I came out, figured it'd be easy, you know, if I didn't get my card through playing a lot of events, and I could go through Q school. And so, no, fortunately, about a year after I turned pro, year and a half after I turned pro, I was able to get some status on the web.com tour. And then had a bit of a hump 2 years later. There was only 20 cards then, and I was at the tour championship, and I finished 21st. Lost out by about $1,000. Guy ahead of me chipped in on 17 for par and 18 for birdie to knock me out. That pretty lonely flight home from Houston. I'll never forget that. Got home, was super disappointed. Didn't play all that great that following year, and then fortunately bounced back. And I think I had 8 or 9 top tens that next year. Got my card in 08 and here we are 10 years later, talking about it. And that was, you know, that was kind of the path to go. And now that's the only way to go is through the web.com. And I'm glad I did. You know, I think if I would have got on tour right away, you know, appreciated it as much. Obviously, I would have loved to get on tour and win. But I think just the maturity wise and time management and everything that needs to go in it to golf as a professional, I had to go and learn, you know, through the web.com.
Yeah, that was my follow-up to that. Like, you played out there for five seasons. How did the competition and you know, those guys out there can play, how did that make you a better golfer? Or did you have to become a better golfer in all aspects to be able to compete as good as those guys are out there?
Yeah, like I said, you had to become a better golfer and a better professional, you know when to do what, travel, what works for you, not push yourself too much, try not to practice too much, try not to play too much. I mean, that's kind of how it works. You know, you got to trial and error with yourself, because in college, everything was kind of laid out for you. All right, guys, we have practice at this time. Our flights at this time to this tournament, you know, kind of coach did everything to you. And now you're the boss of, you know, CEO, president of your enterprise and your business. So you need to go out and treat it like it. And that's kind of, like I said, what I think that's what going to the web.com tour first and, like I said, appreciate it. But I mean, it's a lot of people say it. It's just as hard, if not harder, to make a cut on the web.com tour, because I think it's 60 or 65 in ties, where the tour is 70 in ties. So there's a little bit, it's not easy out there.
2009 U.S. Open, you get to Bethpage Black. What was your view of that golf course, and was that a course that you knew you could play well, even though it's a difficult golf course?
I did. I was fortunate. I qualified in 02 as an amateur. So I'd actually already played that golf course, knew it. They had added some tee boxes. I mean, to win it going in, I don't know. I wasn't playing that great. I had my tour card, so I felt like, yes, I do belong out here. Do I belong in a major? I hadn't been trending all that well. I played okay the week before in Memphis and had some signs of brilliance. But once I kind of got into the tournament, how I was striking it and how I felt, you know, after the first round or two, yeah, I definitely felt like I could win on that golf course. It was long. We had had some rain that week. And I liked how it set up. You know, off the tee, I felt like it fit my eye really well.
You go 65, 67, you're leading after two rounds. What's that pressure like compared to a normal tour event with the lead going into a U.S. Open?
Well, it's not just a normal tournament where it's covered on Golf Channel. You know, it's covered on every major network and every major website. You know, like I said, it's our U.S. Open here in town, or here in town in the States. I had won a USGA event. I know how it felt. It is, yes, there's different hours of sleep when you're leading a PGA Tour event as opposed to a major championship. Let's just say that.
And then on Saturday, you shoot 70. You're right there. Is it hard to not think about winning it, or do you still just, as a professional, you know the process of what you have to do? Like, does the pressure ramp up as now you're in the lead on the third round going into this?
Yeah, it was. I mean, anyone's lying if they say they, you know. Obviously, we say we try to stay in the present, but when you're sitting still and, you know, eating dinner and a lot of time to think before you go to bed, yeah, it's on your mind. I think once you get out to the golf course, you need to stay in the same routine and do that stuff that got you there. But yeah, of course, it went through my mind, and then went through a bad low stretch where I think I made 5 of 8 bogeys during that round. And then, you know, I fought back and played my last, I think it was 5 or 6 2 under, and had a putt to kind of tie Lucas. But yeah, you know, you get ahead of yourself, start doing things a little quicker. And not to say I would have completely done anything different, whether hitting clubs off the tees and stuff, but yeah, I'm sure there's a little pressure that got to me, and I was just happy that I fought back and still had a chance to win. With, I think I gave myself 5 birdie putts on the last 5 holes.
Yeah, and Sunday, the golf course must have been playing really tough. I went back and looked at the scores everyone shot. It must have been brutally difficult. And then I know you came up one shot short. Do you look at that scenario of the glass being half full, that you know you can perform at the highest level under the highest pressure on one of the most difficult golf courses there is out there? Or does it still sting to this day that it was one short? Or is it sort of how you ever want, you know, you could take it either direction. Do you choose to take it as a positive that you knew you were right there, you knew you could handle it?
Yeah, positive for sure. Nothing but good memories of Bethpage 09. And then the part that I was probably, if I look back at it in the mirror, that I was proud of myself, is I could have been, you know, let it get to me or something, you know, or eat away at me and maybe kind of go away. But the next year I had 8 top 10s on the PGA Tour and probably my most successful year as a pro on the PGA Tour. 3 times with a chance to win on the back 9 and 11. Got back to the Masters, and I think it was the following year, in 2010 was what I was saying. I think I had 8 top 10s. Even had a chance to win at Augusta that year. I think I finished 8th or 9th, something like that, and played really solid that next year, you know, and that was kind of my goal, to go out and give myself multiple opportunities on the back 9 come Sunday to win, and I did. You know, I had, I think, 2 years in a row chances at Hilton Head, which is being played this week. I had chances at Augusta. So, like I said, it was more of a good bounce back looking at it, as opposed to just saying, well, it's something that I could have, should have, would have done.
Yeah, and you know, like you kind of brought this up earlier as well, but you know, you've been playing full time since you know 2008 on the PGA Tour, and I don't think the average golf fan realizes the talent and how hard that is to play out there basically for 10 years straight at this point against the best in the world. So even, I mean, that alone is a hell of an accomplishment. It's hard to do. It's extremely competitive. And as a follow up to that, you talked earlier too about, you know, what a win would mean. And what do you think, you got the experience, you're still in the prime of your career in your 30s, what do you think it's going to take to kind of get over that hurdle and get that, you know, notch that first victory on the PGA Tour?
Sure, it's, you know, playing multiple weeks in a row and self-belief. You know, like I said, I feel like I've done stuff, I've played well. You know, it's not the best professional career, the career that I thought I've had, you know, when I was 21, 22 years old, but you know, like I said, I don't think anything, you hear a lot of guys talk about it, you know, after a win of, you know, I've been working really hard and it's starting to pay off. So I feel like, you know, come San Antonio, New Orleans, or wherever the next tournament is, and I play well and get in the hunt, that I would probably be one of those guys that said that as well. You know, working hard on my body and my golf game. You know, talking to my coach a lot, getting on film, making sure that all the boxes are checked. And I feel like that's kind of the next hurdle, like I said, as you go in and the self-belief going into a tournament. And heck, you never know. Maybe some of this rest will help me too. I'm playing like some of these other guys where they only play 16, 18 events a year.
Yeah, it worked for Hogan, right? Minimal schedule and you're fresh when you're ready to go.
Yeah, it works for Tiger, a few other guys.
Yeah, exactly. You never know, right? A little change of that, and pretty soon, you know, things happen. I mean, it's funny you say that. I had Ryan Armour on earlier this week, and he just said the same thing. It just sort of trended the right way, and he played solid golf. It wasn't crazy, and next thing you know, he won. He said yeah. There was no real magic bullet. It just hard work, consistent, and good, solid golf. One shot at a time, sort of, you know, and the next thing you know, you win by 3. It was really an interesting conversation of him, like, you know, how did he get over that hurdle and get that accomplishment. So I hear what you're saying. Next questions I have, wrap this up here pretty quick, are just sort of quick answers and whatever just kind of comes to your mind. So if it's okay, I'll fire them at you here. Best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
Best golf shot I hit under pressure.
It can be college. It can be earlier in your career. You know, I've had all kinds of different answers on this.
Yeah. One. I mean, it's, you know, obviously one that you win probably. Actually, you know what? Speaking of the 2009, I didn't win the U.S. Open, but my second shot on number 2 at the U.S. Open on that Monday when we came back out to finish. I mean, I hit it out of the hay. I just hooked it off the tee. My tee shot, the second hole of the final round, and I hit this unbelievable shot, like with an 8-iron onto the green, 2-putted, just what I was envisioning all night. You know, I didn't have a big gap, but yeah, the second shot, U.S. Open, Bethpage, number 2 from the left hay.
Best golf shot you ever saw a plane competitor hit in competition, where you just saw it and you were, I didn't see that one, or just blown away by how good it was?
Oh, yeah, 2003 U.S. Open, Tiger, Olympia Fields, 3-wood, 6th hole. I think he sliced a 3-wood 35 yards and carried it 265, 270.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
His name has come up a few times from other guys I've talked to on just, you know, I didn't see that shot and Tiger hit some. It just crazy.
Oh, he looked at Ernie and I, and I mean, his eyes looked like headlights. I think he even shocked himself.
At your home course at Whisper Rock, do you carry a handicap as a touring professional? And if so, what is your handicap if you have to play against other members out there?
They carry for one. I think they track our scores on tour. We do have one up here. I would say, gosh, probably have to look to that. I would say somewhere between a plus 3.4 and 4.2, something like that.
So you're giving away about four strokes to a zero, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If we play a scratch, we have to give them 2 and 2.
I still think that would be in your advantage, though. I would take the 2 and 2 with betting on your side.
From the tips, though, you got to play us from the tips. The up tees is too much. I want 1 foot in the rough off the tips if I'm giving you the full candy.
Last time you had to pay for a round of golf, not counting dues at your home club, like you go somewhere and they actually charge.
I played for golf twice since I've been a pro. It was the course that was about 500 yards, 800 yards from where I grew up. Christmas Day, and it's a par. It's a 9-hole par 3 golf course. It also has an 18-hole golf course on it. And I went in there, and twice since I've been a pro, there was kind of a kid in the shop, and I said, "Hey," everywhere else, you know, you kind of show your tour card or call ahead. And I said, "Hey, do you take care of pros?" He's like, "Well, my boss isn't here," and just to avoid the conversation of, you know, someone throwing out, "Do you know who I am?" or anything like that. I paid the $22, and I've done it twice now.
Well, yeah, you could have dropped the, have you heard of the U.S. Amateur, but, you know, you probably didn't
want
to have the big time.
Well, the other time was, you know, the U.S. Opens in June, and it was that December after it. It was in 2009, December. I went out with my brother, my cousin, and buddy. And, just paid and moved on.
22 bucks later in a pull cart, you're on the first tee, right?
Oh, yeah, Swenson golf and golf course.
The most interesting three or four people you have gotten to meet in your life, not necessarily golfers, but because of the game of golf, you got to meet these great people.
God, I mean, for me, just growing up and, like I said, having other sports in my life, I would say just the amount of athletes that I've been able to meet, golf with, call friends, stuff like that. Probably one of the biggest is who we've been able to hang out with and play with in the AT&T. I think six of the last eight years, I've either played with Coach Belichick or Tom Brady in the AT&T.
That's pretty darn cool. I got a couple more here for you. You can bring three guys in a fun money game from the PGA Tour. Which three guys are you taking on this little trip, and what do you most admire about these other guys that are your friends on tour that you'd want to play this game with?
Who am I bringing? Probably bring Charlie Hoffman, Nick Watney, and Kevin Kisner.
That's pretty good.
I grew up kind of with Watney. We grew up about 50 minutes from each other. I love him. You know, not a lot of people expect it, but he loves hip-hop rap music like myself. Hoffman and my brother were groomsmen at each other's wedding. Skied with Hoffman a couple of years ago. Like, it just good fun. And then Kisner loves tongue-in-cheek, talk shit, if we could say that word, sorry.
Yeah, sure. No, we're good.
And then I know we'd have money on it. There wouldn't be a shot hit without someone yapping in someone's backswing. And after the round was done or during it, I know we'd have plenty of food and booze to keep us up for the rest of the weekend.
Hey, as a follow-up to that, did you ever get involved in any of those Tuesday games with Phil and that group of guys?
No, I never have gotten into those closeout games. I've played in a few of my own self. I had probably my best one, biggest one, was with DJ Trahan as my partner. We played Ruggiamat and Duffner in Hilton Head about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. That was a fun one.
And my last question for you, best three or four golf courses in the world architecturally, and what makes those golf courses so great?
Two that come to mind, Spyglass Hill and Riviera. Riviera's the compilation of all those par fours out there with short and long and reachable. and mid irons into, short irons into, smaller greens. I love it. And then the mix of kind of NorCal, tree line, and ocean holes at Spyglass. The part that I love too about Spyglass is that, you know, I don't feel like you ever hit a tee ball and feel like your work is done. Like, oh, this is an easy, or this is a birdie hole after you hit your tee shot. You kind of, your work is not done. You know, it's like, it's not like I have a wedger and nine iron in my hand that's an easy pin placement. I feel like even the holes that you do hit wedger nine into, the pin placement's still tricky. If you don't get it on the right level, you know, you have a 25, 35 footer. But if you do hit a shot, you can easily hit it in, you know, to kick in range or 5 footer. And those are the kind of golf courses that I've always enjoyed, that, you know, your work isn't done after hitting a really good tee ball. And the courses that come to mind would probably be Spyglass, Riviera, and maybe, you know, even like a Oakmont or Hilton Head.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on today. Hope you play well in your match this afternoon out at Whisper Rock. And like I said, I greatly appreciate it.
Anytime. Let's do it again.